show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, it is... We still do have some baseball, some Royals baseball to talk to you about, but those days are coming ever and ever closer to an end, at least in terms of this particular season. But before we get into that, I, of course, am Jeff Herr, and with me is the man who his window never closes, Mike Engel. Mike, how are you doing? Now, talking about figurative windows, certainly when it gets cold outside, you close your windows. You're
absolutely. Crazy, yeah, literal windows are closed.
Yes. How are you doing on this evening?
I'm doing okay. Not too bad. Could be better, could be worse. So,
fair enough.
Kind of right in that middle zone of
just kind of
here
living.
Yep,
LIVIN. I got you. So, as I mentioned, the days of Royals baseball are drawing to a close, and there's four games left, counting tonight.
After on the tonight, season. They got five.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, after yeah. tonight. And you know, we've been talking the last few weeks about how the Royals season is essentially over, even though they were still technically alive. But now it is finally official. The Royals season will end on October 1st with their last game. They are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So this – it's very – you know, obviously there were high hopes for this season, kind of the last hurrah, if you will. Things did not go as planned, similar to last year. But now here we are, and there's five games left for this team as it's currently constructed. And then who knows what's going to happen. So, and that's kind of how the team is selling it, at least in terms of trying to get people out to these last few games here in at Kauffman, mainly being this is your last chance to see all this crew together. You know, they gave so many good memories, the two playoff runs, the two pennants they won, the World Series championship, you know, all those great games in the playoffs, all the great games to get to the playoffs and the regular season, plus all the things that they've done, you know, outside of just those 2 years, you know, not to be, you know, including what we talked about last week, the final, too dark to say the final nail in the coffin, if you will, but like the final achievement of this window being the Mike Moustakas plunging through that wall of the great Balboni home run record. It is no more.
Just makes even me think added. Of the Kool-Aid Man.
Exactly.
That Steve Balboni's Kool-Aid Man.
That's why you and I are in sync right here.
Oh, yeah.
But he even added another home run since last week. So now he's at 38 for the record.
Yep.
So eventually, if he hits one more in these next five games, then he may not make it to 40 this season, but it will ensure that if that record ever gets broken again, then it's guaranteed to be 40. So there's that. But anyway, so, you know, that's kind of the way the team is selling it, and that's probably the only thing they really got to sell at this point.
Yep.
As the Royals season winds down, you know, it's it is kind of bittersweet. I think we'll talk about a little bit more in depth, kind of we'll take that stroll down memory lane, if you will, probably closer to next week, and then we'll have all off season to do it. But right now, as we currently stand, the Royals are 77-80. There's still a chance to, you know, depending on how well they finish out, that they could be could technically be better than 500 if they win all the rest of their games. And then if they go 4-1, then they'll be 500 again, which is significant if for nothing else than that that would be five consecutive seasons of non-losing records.
Yeah.
Which we have to make the caveat since they went 500 and have a winning record. But that's pretty – I mean, standing next to a World Series championship and two pennants, you know, it's seemingly insignificant. But, you know, when you look at Dayton Moore and his tenure to this point collectively – and you can see where the Royals were when he got here and where he's gotten them to, you know, obviously culminating with the peak being the championship, of course. But, you know, this five-year run they've had, if they're able to get to 500, that is definitely not insignificant to say, you know, five consecutive years without a losing record, considering, you know, how many years had they had a losing record before. You know, I mean, they had the, you know, 2003, they had that, they finished with a winning record, but...
By accident, more or less.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, I mean, really looks like a weird island of winning baseball in a sea of losing.
Yeah, and you know, I think there was people kind of had that hope that that 2003 Royals team was kind of like the Twins team from a couple years ago, where now you see the Twins are very much in line for a playoff spot this year. So that the Royals were just a couple of years removed back then was kind of the hope, and that never materialized.
No.
And in fact was absolute worst case scenario. But I'm pulling it up here just to see, to provide some context. So let's see here. So the Royals had a winning record in 93 and 94. And then after that, let's see. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 consecutive losing seasons up until 2003, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So 17 of 18 consecutive, or seven, not, it's not consecutive, but 17 of 18 losing seasons before Dayton Moore arrived. Or before 2013, I should say, not before Dayton Moore arrived. And then as of 2013, as of this window, they've had four consecutive seasons of non-losing records, and if they go 4-1 in these last five, they can make that five. And again, not insignificant, very, very cool. You know, I mean, it's like I said, we'll have plenty of time to kind of rehash what's happened in the last 5 years. But as we now know, it's official and the season's over. How are you feeling right now?
I think I got all the feelings or some of the feelings out yesterday because. You know, I watch pretty much every game while keeping an eye on Twitter. Just, you know, I'm a masochist, I suppose. Right. But
it's already established.
Oh yeah. But you know, I mean, if people were kind of getting prepared for this, but I think the fact that the Royals opened their final homestand of the season and of this era. Was really what was getting people to start to really reflect a lot more. And, you know, I mean, that you followed these guys for so long. We've said it before, you know, this podcast has been going on longer than some of these guys have been major leaguers. You know, Eric Hosmer debuted 2 months after this podcast did in its first iteration. So, yeah, I mean, we go through following these guys, and especially someone like, you know, Mike Moustakas, who was drafted – more than 10 years ago by Dayton Moore. So he's been a Royal for 10 years, a significant amount of time. So when you get that kind of a group, and especially one that returned winning baseball to Kansas City, you know, it is kind of a really kind of difficult thing to realize that, oh, okay, that's coming to an end now. And so last night it was kind of a lot of people started to get that realization. A lot of people... You know, this is the one game of the homestand they're able to go to, or maybe it's tonight. And so they know that they're going in, seeing this group for the last time. And even yesterday, I mean, yesterday was the 3-year anniversary of the Royals clinching the playoff spot in 2014. So for them to be eliminated officially 3 years to the day, kind of poetic. I mean, it still sucks, but, you know, it's a clean 3-year window of, you know, this group doing all of this, I guess, you know, it kind of works in a way. It's no less disappointing, but you know, it's still one of those things that you can't help but think about it. And so people were sharing memories and things like that. And it's, you know, it's you can't follow this team for as long as you and I have, and as long as a lot of our listeners and a lot of so many others out there have, without getting kind of caught up in the idea that, okay, this is going to be done. You know, there's 5 games left. And it just seems like yesterday that these guys were just starting to get their feet underneath them and playing some winning baseball, and now it's about to end. So, yeah, last night was a little, you know, a little dusty here and there. And
a little dusty.
And especially when, like, the Royals won their game 2-1. Old school kind of Royals game, you know, vintage 2014, pitching and defense, timely hitting. And within minutes, Minnesota won their game and officially eliminated the Royals. So you didn't even have, like, a lot of time to have a pretend glimmer of hope that, hey, maybe we're still not out of it. No, it's within a couple minutes, Minnesota finished off their game. The Royals' tragic number fell to 0, and that was it. So, you know, I'm going to the game on Sunday, so we'll see how that goes. And in the meantime, just kind of going to watch them and take it in. And been watching a lot of playoff clips in the last week or so. So watch some of the wild card game and that comeback against Houston and just other stuff. So, you know, trying to kind of keep the eye on the past, but, you know, watching the team for today and, you know, one of the last, well, now 5 opportunities I'll have to see them. So it is really bittersweet. You know, you do think about the really good memories and the great run. But yeah, I mean, it's everything has to end at some point. And for the Royals, you know, barring some kind of crazy miracle of finding a lot of money and signing everybody who's going to be a free agent, this is pretty much it. So just kind of getting through it. And I think a lot of people out there are kind of in the same boat where time marches on. You're not going to do anything about it. So you just kind of have to deal with it each day until we get to the end, and then you see what happens. So it's kind of a weird, weird fandom situation right now.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of just kind of have to get through it.
You don't have a choice,
you know, as a fan. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, to your point of, you know, all things good, all things come to an end. I mean, if you were, let's say, right, the last time the Royals had a winning record before 2003, 1995, let's say you became a Yankees fan that year. This is completely hypothetical because people just don't randomly become Yankees fans, do they? No, that doesn't happen. People don't bandwagon jump on the New York Yankees. That would be strange. But anyway, let's say 1995 was the year that you decided to do that. Completely hypothetical. You know, then you're looking at 13 straight years of playoff appearances with the Yankees, and you're looking at 6 World Series titles in a span of 8 years, right? And then you take 1 year off where you don't make the playoffs, and then they go back and they win the World Series starting a stretch of 4 years. So that's 17 of 18 years they make the playoffs, including 7 World Series titles, okay? Six. I one of these said lost World Series. My bad. I screwed that up. So 6 World Series titles. Apologies. Point being, then at the end of 2012, maybe perhaps coinciding with the reign of the Royals. I don't know. You know, I'm not here to make that claim. But starting in 2013, you know, the Yankees have made the playoffs once since then, and it was the wild card that they made, and they ended up losing that game. So they didn't even, you know, they just had the one and done game. Now, they'll be going to the playoffs this year as a wild card team. So they're back in the race, or back in the mix, if you will. But, you know, point being that's possibly one of the greatest dynasties in baseball history, the Yankees. And, you know, that had to come to an end too. So we all knew it was coming. And, you know, we've seen it played out in various forms before with other teams, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate that it does have to come to an end. But I think, and you can look at it, and there are a couple things that I think can possibly give you, you know, you or me or the average Joe fan, if you will, a little hope. So we've got number one, when I look at it and think, okay, well, what's the Royals' destiny? Where are they going from here? You know, they reached the highest of the highs, and now they are in a precarious position where they're going to lose all this talent. They've essentially emptied the farm system to try and maximize this window, which was the right choice, regardless of where it puts them now as of today. But knowing all the, you know, knowing all that, having all that, where do they go from here? What's the end? You know, what are we looking at as possibilities for the Royals? You know, and I think hopefully part of the goal, and a realistic goal, would be something like what the Oakland A's have accomplished over the last two decades, we'll say. So, you know, they had that run of three straight World Series ending in 1990, and they had a long period of just kind of bad to middling teams. And then they kind of ushered in the Billy Beane Moneyball era, and they make four straight playoff appearances. Of course, they don't do anything with it. You know, they don't even get out of the DS. And then take a couple of years off, get back to the playoffs again. They made it to the ALCS this time, but they lose. And then they lose a lot of the, you know, that this is, that was already after they had lost a lot of the talent from those four straight playoff appearances. So then they take a few years off, you know, as they slowly kind of rebuild again. And then they have, and they made three straight playoff appearances, again, doing nothing, of course, culminating in that final appearance where they lost in that epic wild card game to the Royals, starting their run, starting the Royals' run. So, and now they're kind of, you know, they're on the backslide again, and who knows if they're going to be able to fix that or not and get back in the picture. But, you know, I think that's a realistic possibility for the Royals. They, you know, they were in a situation where they maximized everything they could. They won a World Series title, made a couple playoffs, but now they're going to have to rebuild, and they're going to have to do it. It's going to take some time. You know, it's going to be a few years. They're going to be a few years without the playoffs. There might, you know, I don't think this team is in as bad a position as they were in, say, 2005 in terms of talent and in terms of depth in the farm system. So I don't know that I see any seasons that are, like, that bad. You know, when you start talking about those 4 out of 5 seasons losing 100-plus games for the Royals. But there's, you know, a lot of 75-ish win type teams, I think, are around the corner. So like the late 90s, early 2000s type Royals, that's where it feels like we're going to be. The question is, can they take that and use that time to build towards getting back to another, to the point where they're opening another window? Because the problem they did is they didn't maximize what they had in that late 90s, early 2000s window with Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, Mike Sweeney, all those guys. There was, you know, there was probably more they could have done to really try and help themselves kind of have this be the ushering in of a new era. They just kind of failed at that, you know, and you know, is what it is. You can't go, you know, it's just history now. But so the you don't want a repeat of that situation. But then when you come talk about when, you know, Dayton Moore came in and, you know, there was very little talent in the farm system. You had Alex Gordon, Billy Butler, and that was essentially it. You know, Zach Greinke was there. He was, you know, already at the major league level. And, you know, they had Joaquin Soria. I don't even know. They didn't even have Joaquin Soria when he
came there.
He was part of what selecting him in the Rule 5 draft. So, you know, it's – there's – hopefully – that's what they can do. It's going to take some time because when you're a small market team like the Oakland A's are and like the Royals are, it takes a little bit to do that. But hopefully there's, you know, they've laid out the model for their success. They know how to get it done. They've been there before. And can they do it again? And, you know, I at this point, I think I have faith in the organization that they can, you know, but because before, you know, growing up, if you're me growing up, you know, being born the last time they won the World Series, like, I did not have faith that the Royals could do it. You know, in whether you're talking, you know, late 90s, whether you're talking mid-2000s, whether you're talking when Dayton Moore first showed up, or even, you know, circa 2011 or 2012, you know, come to play Royals and they start off 3-14, you know, I mean, even at that time, the faith was not there. And at that time we were doing the podcast. You can go back and listen. And I was, you know, I've never been more glad to be proven wrong.
Right.
But I didn't have that belief that they could actually do it. Now I do. But it's not a certainty either. It's just a question of whether or not they will. But, you know, it's – and something that has kind of flown under the radar, but Ned Yost has confirmed that he'll be back next year.
Yeah.
Right? So
he said something like he doesn't foresee something. I don't even know what the quote was, but basically that it would take something really crazy to get him to not do it. And so he'll do it. So,
yeah. So, you know, it's not quite, hey, we're getting the band back together or whatever. You know, I just assumed that Ned Yost would kind of ride off into the sunset with the rest of this crew. And I absolutely would not blame him for it at all.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like entering this year he was eyeing retirement, and you know, this would be a good time to step away and do that if he wanted to.
Absolutely.
But if, you know, he wants to just keep going, then he'll keep going. So he'll be back.
Yeah, he will be back. And you know, it's he and Dayton Moore, I mean, they've obviously been there, they've done it, and they have that experience now to look on. And they have, more importantly, I think, when it comes to developing players, to signing free agents, to getting players in the organization, they have that respect as people that have done it. So however much value that has is however much value that has, but it's there. It's something that's real. And so, you know, that if you're feeling a little sad, a little dusty, a little misty eyed about, and no one here is judging. No one's going to blame you. It's probably going to feel the same way on this show. So
Sunday's going to be crazy. It's just
I mean, if that's where you are, then first of all, that's okay. Yeah. Second of all, if you're trying to tear yourself up, look at a little bright side. You know, those are the things that the Royals have going for you, and that's kind of a realistic way to look at this and prepare yourself mentally that, you know, next year is probably going to be the roughest of the next few as they try and really kind of get their bearings and their footing. Because even before Moose and Hosmer arrived, they were still part of the plan. They were still that fallback. You know, they were doing well in the minors. It was, you know, 2010, 2011, or 2009, 2010, et cetera. Everyone was like, okay, we know these guys, they're good, they're performing, they're going to be here, they're going to do this, they're going to be part of this thing. So, you know, it's been so long that they've been kind of part of the picture, if you will. And like you said, I mean, Moose was drafted over 10 years ago, so, you know, it's going to be a little weird trying to figure out for the organization how to handle moving forward without any of these guys. But so next year is going to be a little bit of an adjustment, I'm sure, but they should be pointing, you know, pointed towards that North Star, if you will, and hopefully they can get back to the point where we're talking playoffs again, and who knows, maybe World Series and pennants, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they're going to have – I mean, a lot of the guys that we'll see next year are guys that we've seen bits and pieces of, you know, Raul Mondesi, Chesler Cuthbert, Hunter Dozier hopefully will be healthy and able to pop up. You know, Cam Gallagher has maybe not next year, but, you know, in the coming years, he'll definitely be a guy who will be a solid backup at the big league level. Whit Merrifield has emerged. We've seen Jorge Bonifacio perform over most of a full major league season. You know, there's going to be an opportunity for Jorge Soler and Paulo Orlando next year. You know, Orlando had a good 2015 and was a big part of that team's success. So, you know, you've got guys who can do something. You'll have Sal Perez returning. Danny Duffy will be back. Jason Hamill has pitched well. He'll be back. Jake Junis has been very good. He'll be back. Scott Alexander. You know, a lot of different guys that we've seen this year, last year, they should be around for next year. So, you know, there's an argument, and a lot of teams might look to the Cubs and the Astros as examples of the whole tanking idea and just blow it up and build completely from scratch. You know, in some cases, yeah, I think that kind of works. But, you know, it is something that's, that can be pretty risky because, you know, the Royals for a number of years really did try to sell things off, and it did not work very well.
That wasn't even intentional tanking. They were just that bad. They were tanked
just,
anyway.
They were just bad. And you know, you kind of saw it finally when, you know, in 2005 they had the second overall pick. 2006 they had the first overall pick. 2007 second overall pick. 2008 third overall pick. 2009 they were somewhere like, what, 12th or 14th or what? I don't remember where. You know, a lot of top five picks in there. And really, who really emerged from those? You know, Hochaver, Gordon, Hosmer, Moustakas. Those guys, yeah, they did hit, but they all had their bumps as they came up. It's not like they came up and they were Chris Bryant right away or Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or some of those other guys who were also top five picks who came up and blew away the competition from the get-go. So, you know, if you do tank, you kind of have to endure some of those 100-loss seasons for the opportunity to pick high in the draft, and it's still no guarantee that those guys are going to advance quickly enough to fit in whatever window and time frame you think you want to get. The Royals were pretty fortunate in that a lot of those guys, Sal Perez, Greg Holland, Kelvin Herrera, they popped up kind of out of nowhere to be legit big leaguers at about the same time as guys that they were expecting, like Hosmer and Moustakas and Danny Duffy were all coming up. And so they all converged in 2011 where all these guys are, you know, still in their rookie status. And 4 years later, they're winning a World Series. You know, that you can't really plan that. It just kind of has to work out. And so that's why I don't know that tanking's really an option. You know, you have to kind of strip it all down to the bare bones in order to do that. And, you know, like we talked about around July, you know, if the Royals were going to do that at some point this year, it would have involved probably trading Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, and Lorenzo Cain. And in that case, you know, I still don't feel like the impact prospects were going to be there. They might be there in the next draft. They might not. But we've also seen things like the Royals had top five picks and got Bubba Starling and Kyle Zimmer, Christian mm-hmm. Colon, you know. So just because mm-hmm. you're picking in that area doesn't mean you're going to get, you know, the kind of guy that's going to jump up and be an impact player down the line. So they're going to have to do a little bit of learning on the job, and they're going to have to see where they are in a couple of years and if there's actual progress coming along. So, you know, I think they'll have a team that's, you know, probably going to be, like you said, 75, 72 win team. Not great, but, you know, maybe they learn something. Maybe they figure something out. Maybe other guys like, you know, Whit Merrifield, maybe other guys develop and show up and emerge into guys that look like they might have a significant role on this team. So, you know, that's kind of what you have to look at this stage. You know, it's going to be an interesting off season. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that, but you're going back to just how the cycles go. It's going to be a downturn and there's going to be a couple of years. The Indians are going to be good for a little while. The White Sox have a really good farm system. The Twins apparently are good now. So still don't get that, but whatever. So the Royals are going to be on the downswing of that, and Tigers are going to be on the downswing of that. And we'll see, you know, in 5 years, the Royals might be jumping back up into that group. It might even be sooner. So they're certainly in a better position today than they were when Dayton Moore took over. Because he took over with basically no farm system. They had Butler, they had Gordon, they had Greinke, who was still young enough to be considered a rookie. But they didn't have much in the way of Latin scouting or development. That's something he really invested in. They weren't doing much for the draft. Dayton Moore was really creative in how he was approaching draft picks and signing them under more flexible rules than today. So the system, he was able to kind of make it work and get this talent into the system. Next year, they're probably going to have three extra draft picks after Moustakas, Hosmer, and Kane sign somewhere else on top of their regular draft picks. So they're going to have some money. They're going to have a lot of options. So it might be a nice basis for them to get the next wave. We keep talking about waves with this group. That second wave never really showed up. It was more of like a drizzle of role player
types. And
in fairness,
they traded half the wave to get the first wave that over the hump.
Absolutely.
Which is fair.
Think of the names they traded. Let's see. Jake Odorizzi, Mike Montgomery, Will Myers. They traded John Lamb. They traded Brandon Finnegan. They traded Sean Manaea. They traded Cody Reed. Matt Strom. A lot of names. A lot of guys.
Yeah. That's a lot of really good names.
A lot of groups. I mean, Odorizzi, Lamb, Montgomery, Myers, those were in that 2011 group of top 100 prospects.
Yep.
But you got James Shields, Wade Davis, Johnny Cueto out of that.
Yep. And most importantly, a World Series title.
And World Series title. So, I mean, you wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean,
not at all.
Very few teams, very few general managers and franchises get to that point. Because the Yankees and Cardinals seem to win it all the time. So,
and how many teams, you know, look no further than the Royals' wild card opponent in 2014. How many teams have been in that position in terms of record, in terms of how good their team is, and pushed all their chips in the middle of the table like the A's did when they traded for John Lester that year, and it didn't pay off for them. Yeah. You know, so now the A's are left with nothing. They traded away. You know, they lost the players they traded away, and they got John Lester, who helped. And then almost immediately after that trade, they started kind of – they had such a huge lead that year that they still made the playoffs. But, you know, they ended up with nothing to show for it. They lost the wild card game to the Royals, who went on to go to the World Series. You know, so it says something, you know, not only that Dayton Moore went for it, like he said he would if they were ever in that position, but he made it work and actually, you know, actually had it paid off. And something that we didn't really talk about, we give all the credit to Dayton Moore and to Ned Yost as well, and rightfully so, but, you know, as you talk about how they built up the system and investing in Latin America and how Dayton Moore changed how they targeted their draft pick. Targeting might not be the best word, but how they, you know, selected their draft picks and how they really tried to do the hard sell, if you will, and getting these people in, these players into the system. So not only would they have good players ready to come up, but good players that they could trade like they did. But some of the credit, a lot of that credit has to go to David Glass as well. And, you know, when we've had Sam Ellinger on the show a few times, and he made the comment that I think really puts a really, really fine point on it, which is to say, you know, from 2000 to 2006, 2000 being when David Glass took over, you know, as full owner.
the Walmart years.
Yeah. From 2000 to 2006, he was maybe the worst owner in baseball, and I don't know that there's much of an argument there. But since Dayton Moore arrived from 2006 to current, he's maybe been one of the better owners in baseball. And – you know, there's – I imagine that Dayton Moore wanted to come to Kansas City. David Glass wanted him to come to Kansas City. But Dayton Moore was like, listen, if I'm coming, you got to be on board with this thing, and you've got to promise me that you're going to make this work. And I imagine that he said, okay, I promise you I'll make this work. You know, if you can get us there, I can get you the money and the freedom to put us over the top. And that's exactly what happened.
He did it.
So, you know, and even going back to 2010, 2011, 2012, I mean, much is made about that 2011 season when the Royals had that ridiculous $35 million payroll. But again, that was kind of misleading because you talk about, you know, as you were saying, how they really, you know, the rules were more lax back then, so they could throw out these huge bonuses. I mean, Will Myers was like a fifth-round draft pick, right?
He's a third rounder, but he should have been a third first rounder. But they paid him like first a first rounder.
Nobody thought he was going pro. Everyone thought he was going to go to South Carolina and to play in college. And the Royals made him a really good offer, even as a third round pick. And so he went. He
lo
went
and
pro.
Behold.
Yeah, and then they used him as the centerpiece for that trade that brought over James Shields and helped him get to that first World Series. So, you know, that's one example. And then Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Scott Boras being their agent, you know, he drives a hard line. And at that time, the Royals still had, I think, a lot of bad feelings with Scott Boras, a lot of some bad relationship due to some of the previous run-ins they've had with some of the players he's represented, and you know, it went down to the wire with both of them. You know, Moose being signed at close to midnight, and Hosmer, that's a little bit of controversy in that
theory was signed maybe even after midnight.
Yeah, so some people crying that that shouldn't have been allowed, and he should have had to go to college. Who knows what would have happened then? But you know, point being, the money was there. When it really came push to shove, literally when the clock was striking midnight, the money was there when it needed to be. And when they needed to sign the free agents, the money was there. When they needed to pick up the extra payroll because of the trades, the money was there. And so and in the background of that as well, the money to start up the focus in Latin America, where, as you said, it was non-existent before Dayton Moore got here, and now the Royals are probably one of the most active and probably one of the best organizations in Latin America in terms of identifying talent and signing talent. But, you know, it produced, like, people you've already mentioned, Kelvin Herrera, Salvador Perez. I mean, guys that kind of essentially came out of nowhere that were really good finds by the scouting department. And that wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for David Glass saying, okay, I'll give you the money to start this. I'll give you the money to really put into scouting in that area of the world. And it absolutely paid off. You know, so that trio there, Ned Yost, Dayton Moore, David Glass, all get so much credit because they all had their roles that they had to play, and they all had to come through with, you know, doing what they needed to do, which Ned Yost was a player's guy. He needed to control that locker room. But he needed to provide an atmosphere where they could kind of foster that family atmosphere and grow together as a team. Did it perfectly. Dayton Moore needed to put the pieces together, and when they were close, make the right moves to put him over the edge. He did it, and then underpinning all that, David Glass had to provide the money and the opportunity to allow them – or the money and the freedom to allow them to do everything they needed to do in those situations. And he was there and did that, and they got a World Series championship. So – pretty remarkable, really, when you think about it. And how many teams, how many organizations, you talk about the A's, talk about your team like the Rangers, too, which is also another team I wanted to cite. It's very similar. You know, they never made the playoffs in their history until 1996. And then they, you know, made a few, took some years off, made a few years off, made a few similar. So that's another team the Royals can kind of look at. But even when you look at them, or you look at the A's post those kind of three World Series and at the end of the 80s there, you know, teams that haven't been close but haven't made it happen. And the Royals, they got close and they made it happen, and it all worked out. You know, it's really quite amazing to it's quite amazing. I don't know what, you know, we've talked about it a million times, but it never ceases to amaze me that it actually all did come together.
Yeah, I know. And that's going to be the thing. That's going to be the thing that gets me through the off season, because you know, all those games from those playoff seasons, you can find them online and stuff. They're on YouTube. It's not like they're hiding in the dark web or anything. They're pretty easy to find. But yeah, I don't know what else you could ask for. I mean, yeah, I'd like to have made the playoffs this year, and maybe their approach for the off season was misguided or incorrect, you know, when they're trying to kind of contend and rebuild at the same time. Yeah, it's tough. It's like the Ron Swanson quote, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. they half-assed a couple of things, and, you know, they lost Rod Dyson and Wade Davis, and, you know, Soler did not do much, and Nate Karns was hurt through most of the season, so those trades did not work out. You know, I don't know. It was a tough thing that they wanted to do, but I think they also wanted to give it one more shot, but couldn't quite commit to the idea that they were going to lose everybody. So they did have a tough shot this year, you know, we've got all off season to dissect if it was the right thing, the wrong thing, how right, how wrong, whatever. They tried it, didn't work. You know, if they had not won a World Series, it would hurt a lot more for sure. If they hadn't won a World Series, maybe they don't do it. You know, maybe they give it one real last shot and they really do invest in everything. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of different things that you could say. Sal Perez hits a homer off Madison Bumgarner. Do they have the 2015? Who knows? I don't know. You know, there's so many different things. We'll never know. We, you know, we can postulate. But, you know, that dissection, we can do that later. But, it, you know, it's a tough task for them this year. Didn't work out. Pitching was really bad in the second half. And so now we're at a point where Ned Yost will return. He'll oversee a crop of young players again. Hopefully his approach will develop some of those guys who are maybe not as blue chip of prospects. You know, Dozier's not quite the prospect that Moustakas or Hosmer was. Ryan O'Hearn will probably do something next year. He's not quite the guy that Hosmer was prospect-wise. So, you know, their prospect value is a little lower than what they would have coming back into the system. But, you know, there's still guys who have put in the work and have a shot to maybe be something. And, you know, like you said, I think Ned Yost is the kind of right guy for that situation. I always used to say that I felt like he was the right guy to get them ready to win a World Series, but maybe not actually win it. And then they went and won it. So
we said the same thing about Dayton Moore in terms of being a GM. So
yeah, so I mean they found a way to do it. So, you know, their legacies are pretty secure as far as Kansas City is concerned. So Ned Yost will probably be a manager as long as he wants to be manager. Dayton Moore will probably be GM as long as he wants to be GM. You know, it's pretty much how it kind of is going to shake out for Kansas City, right or wrong. That's probably how it's going to go.
Yeah, and I'm not in the business of you know, declaring so-and-so should have a statue or so-and-so should, you know. But if you're building statues of people, of players, you know, as far as an organization is concerned, you know, right now the Royals have a Ewan Kauffman statue. They have a DeKalzer statue, George Brett, Frank White. So, you know, all – when you think of Royals and you think of statues they would have and you hear those names, every one of them, you're like, okay, I got no qualms with that, you know, no issues. So, you know, indeed, with Ned Yost, it's one of those things where he, especially in his first couple of years, he didn't endear himself to the fan base. He didn't endear himself to the media.
No.
to put it lightly. And, you know, people didn't like him, both in media and the fan base. And now I think people have kind of grown to love him because, of course, after you, it's easier to love somebody after you win, especially World Series. But, you know, not only in that run up to the World Series, those 2 years, especially after they made the playoffs and they had success in the playoffs in 2014, you know, Ned kind of loosened up a little bit. He kind of became a little bit better with the media and made himself a little bit more effusive to the fans and stuff. So he's a little bit easier to like him. But I think there's still a little bit of that kind of – a little bit of negativity towards him. Even, you know, for people that have fully come around on him like myself, you know, it just – he doesn't feel like that like embodiment of the organization that you sometimes think for somebody that should or would deserve a statue. But if you break it down, you know, winning as coach or winning as manager in Royals history – 2 pennants, more than any manager in Royals history. World Series, as much as any manager in Royals history. I mean, if you're going to make a statue,
right?
I don't know how you don't make one of Ned Yost, to be honest. So, you know, again, I'm not saying like, oh, the Royals, I'm not leading that crusade.
You're not going to start a petition.
Yeah, but if you're picking somebody from the era, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, Hosmer or maybe Gordon, you know, or, you know, whoever else to have that statue to kind of – if you had one statue to kind of embody the era. But honestly, you'd almost have to give it to Ned Yost. So, you know, pretty crazy when you think about, You know, just another
right.
one of those things where you think back, like, man, how did we get here? Like, you know, we were talking about, I mean, 2012, we're like, man, Ned Yost, he's the wrong guy. He needs to be fired, certainly with the media. He's obviously not good with the players. And
why does he play Chris Getz so much?
What the hell is wrong with him? He's still pitching Kyle Davies all the time. You know, Luke Hochaver is still a starter. What's going on?
Why didn't he pinch hit for Escobar?
Oh, geez. So he has to learn how to hit.
Can't get in his dome.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, all those things. There was that period starting in 2014 where every kind of platitude that Yost or Dayton Moore said just became true, right? So,
right.
You know, when Escobar was really struggling, it was like, well, you know, we really need to keep him in because when we start to get good – and it's going to matter. He needs to know how to perform in those situations. And I'll be damned if Escobar didn't perform in a lot of – so he's had his struggles.
ALCS MVP.
Yeah, exactly. And starting off the 2015 World Series with an inside-the-park home run. I mean, you know, it worked. And
it shouldn't you know, have, but it did.
Exactly. You had Dayton Moore. You know, oh, well, this team is perfectly capable of winning 15 out of 20, and we collectively like, okay. hold our eyes up the back of our heads. And they've done it literally every year since
right.
he said that.
That first year they won 16 out of 20 for good measure.
Yes.
Just to stick it in our faces. So.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, there was – and then when you said talk about Ned Yost talking about the different power numbers for all these guys that they could have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It turned out – yeah, oh, well – you know, Lorenzo Cain did have an MVP year where he didn't hit, you know, 40 home runs, but he had 17, which was, you know, way more than he had in a year previous. And, you know, Hosmer's had a 25 home run year, and he could have a second one if he hits another one of these next few games. Moose now is nearing 40. He's had a couple really good years, and Salvador Perez has had just 4 seasons now for him with 20 home runs or more. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he's 27. He has a shot at 30. 30 home runs yeah. for a catcher is – that's rare air right there.
Absolutely. And, I mean, let's see. He's had
– I think he's at least increased it each of the last, like, 4 seasons, maybe even 5.
Yeah, every – no, literally every season. So he had 3 in 2011, 11 in 2012, then 13, then 17, then 21, then 22, and now 27. So
– so. So in 5 years, he's going to hit 60.
There you go. Well, interestingly enough, you know, we talked about the second – this is just kind of an offshoot of this particular topic here, but we talked about the second half slide. So Salvador Perez has played 128 games this year, which is, you know, less than he played all of last year, and it's the least amount of games he's played in a full season in his career. So, and he's got 27 home runs, which is 5 home runs more than any other year that he's hit. He's got a batting average of .268, which is the highest it's been since 2013. He's got an OPS of .794, which is the highest it's been since 2012, and that wasn't even a full season for him. So, you know, there might be a little bit something to this thing here where if you pace yourself with Salvador Perez a little bit more and you rest him a little bit more, maybe he actually will be more productive offensively. Even it hurts to lose him, you know, for more innings, for more games, to lose that defense. But, you know, the offense, the offensive production probably outweighs it. But that's an aside. We can kind of rehash mm-hmm. that once we have the final numbers from the full season. You know, it's that was that period of time where all these kind of just, you know, whatever type statements, and we all rolled our eyes, and next thing you know, they're one by one, they're coming true. And
Wade Davis is the key to the trade. Well, okay.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Even if you go back to – if you start the chain right there and you keep going back through – all the different absurd things that came true. It can start with when Dayton Moore was hired and he said, I'm hired to bring a championship back to Kansas City. And boom, there it was.
Okay, Dayton.
It took him 10 years, but, you know.
Hey, they did it.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Yep. So man, it's been quite a ride. We'll definitely have quite a bit more to rehash next week as well. We can kind of go take a bigger trip down memory lane. And speaking of which, the last thing we'll kind of end on, and I was unaware of this. Mike, you mentioned this to me before the show. Former Royals beat reporter and current Seattle Mariners beat reporter Bob Dutton has announced that he is retiring. So this is his last season. He's not retiring after next. He's not doing a farewell tour a la.
No, he should, but it's when Mariners are done this year, he's done. That's it.
There you go, and they're not they're behind the Royals even, so they're not making the playoffs either. So that his tenure is done, and you know if you want to talk about he might
guy
he
who's
might
seen the, some battles,
the, he might be the Mike Sweeney of beat writers.
He's the Patrick Kevin Ewing,
the Kevin Apier of beat writers. Yeah, just the guy that's just totally unappreciated, but partially because you know I mean he spent. How many years writing for 13 years as the official beat writer, but even more than that, writing about the Royals for all these losing seasons and never seeing the playoffs as a beat writer. And then he goes up to Seattle kind of right when they were making a big splash. They had signed Robinson Cano and they had just re-signed Felix Hernandez at that time to a big contract and things were looking up in Seattle and that never really materialized into anything. So he's calling it quits, hanging up the pen, typewriter, paper, word processor, iPad, whatever you want. He's probably used them all, to be honest.
He probably had to teletype some of his first stories, I would bet.
I would imagine, yeah.
You know, the old school, like, I read this
book.
Go ahead.
We need to have him on after the season.
I would like to talk to him.
That'd be cool. We can have him as a farewell, and kind of he can go over some of his highlights from his career and – and we can ask him if he had what was the first published article he ever wrote. What was the format that he or the apparatus he used to write it on? I'm curious about that. We need to work on this. That'll be fun if we get the show. So congratulations to Bob Dutton on a fantastic career. We missed him so much in Kansas City. I really wish, as much as I think Andy McCullough is a fantastic writer. And did a fantastic job for those 2 years he was in Kansas City, especially, you know, his recap
of the wild card game.
Oh my God, that was one of the best pieces I've ever read.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So it gives me, I just got chills now. Just think about it. I just got chills. So, you know, he's a fantastic writer. But as much as I enjoyed his writing and all the talent he has, God, I would have loved to have seen what Bob Dutton could have done with those 2 years and the tons of game recaps he could have written and the stories he could have come up with and written about and everything. So, you know, it's unfortunate that he didn't, you know, after putting in all the hard work, if you will, he didn't get to reap any of the benefits and write about a winning team. But he is just as much of a winner in my book as a beat writer.
Yeah. I can't say enough great things about Bob Dutton. He is old school. He is what they call a ball writer, which is about the best thing you can say for a guy in his profession. He just does it. He's professional. He hammers out the stories. You know, anymore nowadays, you see a lot of the news break from the national guys, the Ken Rosenthals and Jeff Passans and Joel Shermans and whatnot. He's kind of, you know, in that group that, you know, still the beat writer is the guy who broke the news first and the national guys followed up. And that's not to say anything about the current crop of beat writers. I think it's just a focus that's changed among those publications. But, I mean, you know, Dutton was the guy. He had that info first most of the time because he was just, you know, he was a pro. He was pro's pro. And, you know, really, really liked following him on Twitter, you know, because he's just curmudgeon-y, but with kind of a smirk. You know, it's not like he's just a jerk, you know. He's popping you, but he knows he's popping you and it's all good natured. You know, he's been very kind and supportive of us, and by us I mean like the blogger community. I mean not all of us. There's some weirdos in this group, but you know, he's sent us a couple things and been gracious with his time and really shown that, you know, he kind of knows that we kind of get what he does, and you know, we're very appreciative of what he's been able to do covering the Royals and kind of helping, you know, encourage us in very small ways. It's not like he's giving us a pep talk every month or something, but every so often something will come through from him, you know, especially in those darker years, you know, in the 2010 through 2013 kind of blogging years. So, again, can't say enough about him. He's someone I always enjoyed following and reading, and a well-deserved retirement. And he gets to do so in the place that, you know, up in the Pacific Northwest, which is what he said is his favorite part of the country. So it's not too bad.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll work on that. We'll try and get him on the show, because that would be fun. And he's always a great guest. And as you said, he's been supportive of the blogger community, and, you know, he was always willing to come on this show, assuming he could make it work in his schedule, and was supportive of us and was always a great guest. So echo everything you said. Fantastic guy. Congrats on a fantastic career to Bob Dutton. And we still wish you were here, but right. Yeah. You well-deserved retirement, and enjoy the Pacific Northwest. It's a great, great place to be, especially if you're going to retire. So with that, we'll leave you. This will be our last show of the regular season, as we will come back next week, of course, as we have all off seasons. Kind of funny, I remember that first year we had the show, we talked about whether we wanted to do this in the off season or not and still keep it rolling. And, you know, we decided to go ahead and do it and see what we could come up with. And, you know, just kind of kept rolling. That's how we are where we are today, I think.
There's more info in the off season, I think, than during the season. Because during the season, we're always catching up on what has happened. And in the off season, it's more along the lines of what could happen. Who are they going to sign? What's the rumor? And catching up on those things. So, kind of two different animals, but, you know, I think
it's easy to speculate in the off season.
It sure is.
Really speculate about facts during the midst of the season, but
some people will try, but
yes, certainly. But yeah, you know, I don't, obviously we'll never know, but I don't know if we would have kept the show going if we would have taken the off season.
I would guess not.
Maybe talked about it. I'm sure it would have probably fallen off at some point.
Cause for me, like I was doing blogging regularly, and we're talking like two articles a day in some spots, up through 2013. I stopped blogging at the end of 2013 regularly, and really never got back into the routine of it. So I think that's what it is. We got to just, it's momentum, inertia, all of that, and I think that first off season kind of did it, you know, and we'll keep doing it. So
absolutely,
we'll just stop keep doing when it. I don't know when we stop, I guess.
The Royals window may be closing on this current wave, but the baseball vault is always open.
You're stuck with us.
You are stuck with us, absolutely. So we'll be back. This will be our last show of the regular season. Royals got 5 more games. We'll be back. Hopefully they can go 4-1. We can have, you know, just be a nice little closure. We'll be cool if they won all 5 and they had a winning record. But, you know, just a nice little closure to keep it in that non-losing category for 5 consecutive seasons. And the last, just some kind of things. Mike and I were talking about this. It's only 5 games. They're out of the playoff hunt, you know, besides the proverbial last chance to see this crew together as it's currently constructed, you know, what else to look for? If Moose, who's hit 2 home runs in a 5-game span tons of times, if he could do that, he'd get to 40 home runs. Yep. And a couple weeks ago, I was very, very upset about my bold prediction of Jason Vargas having an ERA below 4, as he had hiked it up to 4.23 thanks to his second half struggles. But as you pointed out to me today, Jason Vargas has now dipped that down back to 3.94. So will he get one more start or two? I can't recall.
He might get one more start. That kind of sounded like if he has opportunity. Well, I don't know. I mean, because he's at 18 wins now, which is tied with like Kershaw and Kluber for major league lead, which is weird. Doesn't seem like that should be able to happen,
yeah.
But that's what it is. So I don't know if he has an opportunity to take the lead in that kind of situation, they might give him another start. I meant to go and try to calculate like what would a 6-inning start, you know, what would get him just under 4. I think even if he gave up 3 runs, he'd probably still stay under after 6 innings. So, you know, he's probably safe. I don't know. But
let's hope.
Yeah. Yeah. For a while there, it looked like that was going to be an easy gimme, but yeah, he made it interesting in the second half.
Just as a microcosm of the Royals little run here, if you will.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll have the answers to those there.
We'll
get to 40. Will Vargas stay under 4? So the number 4 is very big for this next week. Win 4 games and they have 5 consecutive non-losing seasons. Keep Vargas's ERA under 4 and 40 home runs is what we're looking for Mike. But if he wants to hit 4 home runs, which would put him at 42, which would bump the Royals out of the cellar for all-time single-season franchise home run records, which we talked about as almost a near certainty no more than like 2 months ago.
Right.
And then, of course, Moose battling injuries has had to Kirk Gibson his way to a Royals record, but he did it. So if he can get 4 more in 5 games, which is possible,
mm-hmm.
then we could be looking at just – I flip out if that happens. I will flip out if that happens.
It'd be a nice way to send him off.
It would be.
Just hit a homer every day.
So the number 4, just be thinking 4.
4.
Thinking 4. Use the 4, if you will. So, interestingly enough, you probably don't watch Sesame Street, do you?
Generally don't. It's been a while.
Generally don't. So with my daughter, she loves Sesame Street. It's just a little aside before we go. That use the 4 made me think of that. So every Sesame Street episode, Cookie Monster gets all the best skits because they do these fake big movies, but they put Cookie Monster in them. So they've done like Lord of the Rings, they've done Star Wars, etc. So they do Star Wars, but they're all about like how does Cookie Monster control himself and not eat cookies because, you know, he's basically a crack addict.
Right.
So he's like, oh, I don't want to eat the cookies. So the Obi-Wan Kenobi or Obi-Wan Cannoli, as he was in this one, instructs him to use the 4, where every time he gets the urge to chomp on some cookies, he counts 1, 2, 3, 4 and gets himself back under control.
Okay.
So be thinking, use the 4 this week. Moose can get 4 home runs. The Royals can get 4 wins. Vargas can keep his ERA under 4. Everyone will go out on it'd be a 5-year stretch. But, yeah. Anyway, so keep that in mind. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to visit our sponsors, of course, PP Kansas City. We've always got tons of stuff coming out for you. This is just as Mike and I don't take a break in the off season, neither will all of the hardworking writers we have over at PP Kansas City. We'll be pumping out that content for you all off season long. You know, we're definitely going to be tracking, you know, what the rumors are with all the, you know, Moose and Haas and Kane and Escobar and everything else. You know, I mean, we've kind of assumed it's a foregone conclusion. Those players will be gone, but you know, there's a chance that, you know, definitely not all of them, but certainly, you know, a couple of them could stay. I think any one of them is possible that if all things fell right, it's possible that the Royals could work out a deal with any one of them, depending on certain things. You know, that percentage chance is very low for someone like Eric Hosmer, but it's much higher for someone like Alcides Escobar. So definitely be a lot of tracking of those players through the offseason and just baseball in general. So definitely BP Kansas City, don't let your don't let your following of the site end with the Royals season, because we'll be pumping out content all through the off season as we zero in on spring training for next year. And Kelly's Westport End definitely doesn't have an off season. They're always open. They're always a great time. So if you're looking to drown your sorrows that baseball is over and try and cheer yourself up after the loss of all these possible Royals players, then Kelly's is a great place to go. And if you want to watch some other sports, you know, always a good place to watch a Chiefs game, watch some Monday Night Football, especially when those two coincide like this coming week. But so be sure to visit Kelly's. Be sure to visit BP Kansas City. Always appreciative of their help and everything else. So we'll see you next week. Until then, thank you all so much for listening. We love you all. Thank you all for stopping by. We'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air-conditioned. And the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.